All right, thanks for joining me. I went to the Bitcoin conference April of 2022, and I took a bunch of notes and took a bunch of pictures, and I thought I'd just put together this little slideshow and share with you the information, some of that I gathered. You can actually go on b.tc, and they have a YouTube channel where all of these sessions were recorded, so something in this that I tell you about is interesting, you can go back and actually watch the whole presentation. This is the Bitcoin bull that was unveiled by the mayor of Miami. This was in Miami Beach. There were about 25 to 30,000 people there. It was pretty incredible. I've never been to an event that big. The conference facility is just huge. The one guy I know from Lancaster said that he thought it was probably 9 acres in just this one main conference room, which is pretty incredible. So first one that I started to take notes the first day, I was there Thursday and Friday and Saturday. And these were like the general seminar days where there were speakers. And so Bitcoin athletes were some of the first to speak. Serena Williams was a tennis player. Aaron Rodgers is in the NFL. And so is Odell Beckham Jr. And they were talking a lot about it. I just took a couple good notes. Odell thinks it's going to a new technology that we really need to pay attention to. It's going to really change the way we think about a lot of things. And I'll be talking about that throughout this. Aaron Rodgers is taking his salary in Bitcoin now. It was just a few years ago that somebody told him about it. And he said, well, what's that? And then just went down the rabbit hole like a lot of us do. And Serena says it's a revolution that she's excited about. And she has an investment fund, I believe. I don't know a ton about her, but I know that she's really into, I think, funding startups. I think she has a VC fund. In any event, she is pretty knowledgeable when it comes to money. So it was really cool to hear them speak about it. The next one that I attended was in one of the other rooms, wasn't in the big one, but it was called Becoming a Sovereign Individual. And so these four guys spoke. I don't know a ton about them, but I do know that Pascal, he's a hardware wallet developer. And Parker Lewis has been in this space for a long time, a very, very knowledgeable. Robert Breedlove is a sort of a philosopher and writer about Bitcoin. He's on a lot of podcasts. Matt Barkley is also in the NFL. Really excited about, you know, Bitcoin and what it's going to be, what it can do, what it has done already. Bitcoin revolution should be thought of as a blitzkrieg, not a guerrilla warfare. This is Pascal, the notes from him. There are about 300 million people who own it on the planet and probably about 1 billion people who believe and know about the technology. And it provides average people the ability to vote with your feet by owning Bitcoin because it gives them a way to get out of the current fiat financial system. And this is everywhere in the world. We're going to start to see, or we are starting to see, fiat currencies collapse in different parts of the world. And this is a way that can protect the citizens of these countries. Bitcoin can now be considered the native currency of the internet. I thought that was really cool to think about. Before, there was no way to exchange value over the internet like today. There are many other forms, but Bitcoin has the only core sound fundamentals that make it a sovereign technology to transfer the value from person to person without an intermediary. And that was Parker Lewis said that previous methods of transferring value from one person to another required using precious metals or fiat currency. And the problem with metals is that they're hard to verify and transport. The problem with fiat is that the rules are constantly being changed. With fiat currency, as we know, they keep printing more of it, which devalues it over time. And eventually, every fiat currency that's ever been in existence has collapsed. A fiat currency, if you don't know, is just a government-issued currency like the dollar or any other currency around the world. If you change the rules constantly, nobody will want to play the game is really kind of what's been happening. And that means more and more people are opting out. And That's the main value proposition of the Bitcoin network, Robert Breedlove says. It will allow us to go from mass psychosis to mass sanity, and it provides sound fundamentals and rules that offer freedom. So I thought that was fantastic. I really enjoyed that panel. And then Michael Saylor and Kathy Wood spoke, and they are fantastic. Michael Saylor is the large single holder owner of Bitcoin in the world. His company, MicroStrategy, owns $600 billion in Bitcoin, and he's leveraged 5 times to do that. So he has he's taken loans out, which is what that means, to buy Bitcoin. And Kathy Wood is a star stock picker and founder of a $60 billion ARK investment fund, which invests in innovations like self-driving cars and genomics. So I wanted to put that out there because it's pretty important to understand the magnitude of these speakers. They both agree that Bitcoin is a safe haven for public figures, average people, and societies to store their wealth for a long-term time horizon. That's the way I think of it too. The short-term volatility really isn't something to be too worried about if you're on the long-term time horizon, which is what I feel like is the smarter way to think about it. They warn that regulation will create volatility, and this is expected, so it is normal and for the short term. What's happened in the last few weeks, so we're in April of 2022 right now, what happened in the White House, the president's announcement that they aren't going to try to do anything drastic, Michael Saylor said it is great for Bitcoin. So Gensler said it's not a security, so that is great as well. He basically says everything else is a security. Saylor believes Bitcoin is replacing gold as the non-sovereign store of value as corporations start to look for a safe haven away from dollar price assets. Bitcoin is hedge against counterparty risk. A counterparty risk meaning that if I put my money in the bank and the main bank ceases to exist or gets robbed or something, then I lose my money. And since it's a technology and not controlled by a centralized entity, meaning that there is no counterparty that you can that could take your wealth. So they both agree that the tech is being developed with the rails of the Lightning Network, and the ability to transact over that will drive the adoption aggressively. The Lightning Network is a layer two technology that runs on the Bitcoin network, which is huge, but it is allows us to transact quickly, basically instantaneous from anywhere in the world to anywhere else in the world. And they think that adoption of the Lightning Network and the creation of it is going to just be incredible over the next 36 months. They believe the Lightning Network is the next great thing in the evolution of mankind. It provides frictionless transactions, unlike what Jack Mailer's then talked about, and I'll tell you in a little bit. Bitcoin is the first technology in the world to provide private, open-source rules-based currency. So the rules can never be changed. That's why Bitcoin is going to revolutionize the way we think about finance. And they keep saying the next great thing involves the Lightning Network. So Peter Thiel, the founder of PayPal, spoke, and he's kind of a controversial guy, but I thought it was a fantastic speech. He says it has the potential to replace gold. $900 billion is currently the value of Bitcoin, and $12 trillion is the current value of gold. So if you look at the time horizon, this is very feasible that it will, over time, become as valuable, if not more valuable, than gold. The global equities, like stocks and those types of things, is at $115 trillion versus $12 trillion gold. So in the early 80s, these were equal. So equities are extremely inflated because of the government supporting woke companies and injecting massive amounts of fiat, was his quote. Bitcoin is the most honest and efficient market in the world, and there are some major enemies which could indicate why it isn't worth more today than 42-ish thousand right now. Today, it's just been hovering around 40, 41, 42 for a while, a few weeks, a few months. The list of enemies include Warren Buffett, Jamie Dimon, and Larry Fink of BlackRock. They are pro-blockchain, and he says that is anti-Bitcoin. So I thought that was pretty interesting when he said that. I'd never really thought about it that way. Like, they see the technology of the blockchain being helpful in their industries, but they don't like Bitcoin. Jamie Dimon, I believe he's the CEO of Chase Manhattan Bank, pretty sure, or the owner of that. But anyway, he's one of the richest men in the world. So Bitcoin versus ESG. ESG, he calls a hate factory. He says ESG equals CCP, or the Chinese Communist Party, and is a form of government takeover that we need to be aware of. Environmental social governance is what ESG stands for, if you haven't heard about that yet. The fact that Bitcoin is not a company and is completely decentralized and distributed is a feature, not a bug. And he thinks that the youth is the future of carrying on the Bitcoin adoption. FU Money. So Adam Curry, listen to his podcast, The No Agenda Show. And Francis Naganow, I'm not really sure who he was, but anyway, they had a great conversation. He's from Africa and was talking a lot. And that's Max Kaiser down there in the bottom right. He's a very colorful click character. He owns more Bitcoin than most people on the planet. And he has for a long, long time. So Max is very, very knowledgeable when it comes to Bitcoin. Adam Curry, if you don't know, he was sort of on MTV back in the 80s, and they call him the Podfather. He's created the first podcast ever, and he's very pro-Bitcoin. So Bitcoin is decentralized and cancel-proof. We saw the Canadian truckers. It's more important than ever to have ways of protecting your financial assets. They talked a lot about that. The government froze the assets of the protesters and their families in some cases. And this draconian act is overreaching and a sign that people need to wake up and participate in the new Bitcoin network. FU Money has a new definition from years ago when it was meant to describe the wealthy who walked around with Rolex watches and fancy cars, like back in Adam's era, back in the 80s. That's kind of what it meant, FU Money, but now it means that since we can pay for goods and services directly without a middleman like the bank, we can have freedom from legacy financial systems. And I think we're going to see a lot more of that than ever before, but that's something to think about. And Bitcoin has a limited supply of 21 million and has all of these other sound fundamentals that I keep mentioning. This means that the government can't arbitrarily change the value or the supply in existence like has been done with every fiat money since the beginning of time. Bitcoin is a cultural and brings it's cultural and brings people together unlike any type of financial technology that we've ever seen in the history of mankind. So Jack Mallers, he's the CEO, creator of Strike, which is a payments gateway that they are using in El Salvador. But in any event, he announced that he was able to partner with the main credit card processing company in the world to implement payments over the Lightning Network. This was the big announcement. He used an analogy of the guys on the Bud Light commercial saying, "What's up?" for the banks taking each other's money. So if you've ever seen that commercial, they're like, "What's up?" And the other guy's like, "What's up?" And they just kind of communicate that way. And they use it as an analogy that the banks kind of use when they transfer. If you go to make a credit card transaction, you know, there's five points in every transaction. The person making the purchase, their bank, the processing company, and then the merchant's bank, and then the merchant selling the product. So the Lightning Network allows for the customer to send a payment directly to the merchant without the other three steps involved. And now most major stores, Whole Foods, Walmart, CVS, Starbucks, there's a huge list of them, can accept payments over the Lightning Network. It converts the customer's local currency to Bitcoin. It sends it over the Bitcoin network. And just before it hits the merchant's account, it converts it back into whatever the local currency is. So if I wanted to buy something in Europe, it would take my dollars, convert it to Bitcoin. The European merchant will get it converted into euros and right into their bank account. And this happens instantaneously and practically for free. So it takes out those three middlemen, the two banks and the processing company altogether. And it's going to revolutionize the way we pay. So the way it's used is going to be the next form of adoption, in my opinion, because you have to request to use this. It's not just like taking out your credit card. You have to have an app that does this with the QR code technology. So they can, there's one that you, they can use their scanner to scan your phone. And then you agree to send the currency. There's another one that you can scan a QR code and pay it that way. So I think the user interface is probably at the infancy right now and not widely adopted. So I think that's the next step. But what he did here, I think, is just absolutely revolutionary. And he talked about the history of credit card processing. And it was like 1967 or something like that was the first credit card. And it was at this ritzy diner where the rich people would go and like buy caviar or whatnot. And there was a Diner's Club card. So that was the first credit card. And literally since then, the technology has not changed. So it's like whatever, 50 years later and or 60 years later, now we have a completely different technology that that will, in my opinion, replace the legacy technology where you're paying 3%, right? Every time you make the merchant's paying 3% every time you make a credit card transaction. And in this case, the merchant saves money. So they're going to be incentivized to adopt it or help their customers adopt it so that they can save money. All right, so next we have the macroeconomic landscape. This was really interesting. I have a lot of notes from this one. Mark Moss, who has the Mark Moss podcast, and Jeff Booth, he talk about him. Preston Pish is really respected in this ecosystem. Trey Lockerbie, he was the moderator, and he has the We Study Billionaires podcast. So Preston Fish, he's an entrepreneur, investor, author, and cryptocurrency proponent. He's the founder of Buffett's Books, and his videos on financial investing have been viewed by millions of people around the world. He's also the founder of an investment company, the Pylon Holding Company. Preston talked about the short term versus long term, like 10-year yield curve, that is the biggest negative spread. It is at the biggest negative spread that we've seen in our lifetime. It's kind of complicated to understand, but what it's referred to sometimes as an inverted yield curve in the bond market. So when the 2-year treasury yield tops the 10-year treasury rate, normally that signals a recession is coming, and that's what we're seeing right now. CPI, they're telling us is an old calculation that leaves out important factors that are real expenses for the average person. Like actual CPI I heard the other day, reported, I think is like almost 7.9 or something like that. As of today, it's April 20th, 2022, when I'm recording this. Actual CPI, if you take and put back in all of those things that they don't calculate in the number that they're reporting on, I think there's things like fuel and things like that, that are obviously much more expensive. It leaves out important factors that are real expenses for the average person, but I think it's right now calculated at 13 or 14% if you put back those things. Anyway, Mark Moss is an investor in Bitcoin. He's an advocate who has a radio show on talking about Bitcoin and the financial markets. I listened to that. It's very good. He also did a presentation I saw at the Rebel Capitalist Live event last June of 2021. So there's a 250-year cycle that has been happening for since we have recorded data about this. So the cycle goes from centralized, meaning like after the printing press, for example, it started to decentralize because before the printing press, the church kind of controls. It was a centralized control that the church had over the people. And then it gradually, over a 250-year cycle, it becomes decentralized. So we saw this happen with the Industrial Revolution and things like that. But he has a great presentation. I encourage you to look it up and watch it. And then there's also an 80-year debt cycle that causes fiats to fail. Fiats typically don't last for more than 80 to 100 years. And there's also a 50-year technology revolution that happens. And what is unique about this, and he has a great presentation on, is that all three of these are converging at the same time, and we're living in it right now. If you're paying attention, it's super fascinating to see. If you look around and you pay attention, you listen to these experts that are talking about this. So Bitcoin is the technology that is the catalyst that, like the time of the printing press and the Industrial Revolutions, the internet, et cetera, that have been in the past to create a new revolution. Jeff Booth, he's a visionary leader who has lived at the forefront of technology change for 20 years. He led BuildDirect. It's a technology company that aimed to simplify the building industry for nearly two decades. Through the dot-com meltdown and the 2008 financial crisis and many ways of technological disruption. So he lasted through all of those. He spoke about the internal conflict of the population and the extreme wealth gap that is growing wider all the time. Internal conflict, meaning people are becoming more divided in their views. And this is kind of, and the wealth gap is being created through, I think, the injection of capital from the governments into, like we talked about earlier, some of these major corporations. Anyway, he thinks that we are in a transitional system that is getting us away from the current system through the new technology that is Bitcoin, and also indicated that tech has always been a driver of these major massive changes like we're seeing. So Jeff explains that the gold system as a credit system that has existed for a while being backed by gold, and then it eventually turns into a long-term debt cycle. So growth of the supply is necessary to keep up such a system, or keep a system like that functional, meaning if you're going to have more credit based on gold, then there should be more gold to support that system, but that's just not the way it is. At first, this type of system is based on trust, and when that is abused, the system fails. So it used to be if you had a dollar that you could buy back $1 worth of gold at any time, people trusted that. But since then, it's changed a lot. They keep changing the rules. And he feels that Ray Dalio is missing this in his philosophy. And unless supply increases, the system collapses. Mark talked about the Bitcoin technology that is evolving into a layer 2 and 3 technologies, like I was talking about the Lightning Network, that uses the base layer network, and that we have it all built into one. And he said, talked about something that Peter Thiel said was that velocity is important, and maybe ETH does that. That's something Peter Thiel said, because it's a lot easier to transact with ETH than it is with Bitcoin. Bitcoin to buy things with actual Satoshis, like one Bitcoin is divisible by 100 million Satoshis. To take 10,000 Satoshis and buy a cup of coffee is just clunky. It's cumbersome. It doesn't work very good for that. And what his point was is that because of the Lightning Network, now Bitcoin is the one thing that provides everything we need as a civilization to have sound money, and it's all built into one. So it's a store of wealth. We're seeing layer two and three technologies built on it that'll make transactions a lot easier over time. We're still in a very, very early stages of all of that. So with the ability for anyone to be part of the network means that it's decentralized. And it gives the power to run your own node if you want to. So that a node is the ability to download the entire Bitcoin database, call it. A blockchain is basically a database. And you can join the network, which is something I'm going to learn about. I don't know too much about it now, but essentially allows anybody to do that so that you're in a decentralized consensus network, meaning that your data agrees with all of the other ones on the network. But if you try to change that data at all, you'll be kicked out of the network. So it's going to be, so the question was, is it going to be here in 20 years? Think about anything in terms of financial. If it is, then it is the future. If it's not, that isn't the future of finance. It has to prove that it will be around forever. And their point was Bitcoin does do this. Currencies are going to zero. It's just math. If you can print something into infinity, the value goes down over time because of simple math. Bitcoin will over time approach infinity because of the limited supply. Again, there's only 21 million of them, right? Okay, I'm trying to keep this as short as I can. But in any event, Jeff, he's an investor in early stage tech companies that reduced costs at a staggering amount. He said if they don't do that, he's not interested in investing in that. So the need to print to have growth cycles is the kind of the way the current system works. You need to print more to inject it into the economy. And then we see growth cycles, right? He says that ESG is unsolvable with the current system. Bitcoin is the only way to solve that problem of ESG. And without going into it too much, basically what he means is that as we become more efficient in our financial system, if there is an environmental problem, this is going to be really the only way we're ever going to be able to solve that. Mark says that he talks about eroding trust. He says nations that don't have nuclear can't trust nations that do have nuclear warheads, right? So that's a big problem. And he says it's really hard to verify gold reserves. Countries can say that they have this much gold, but can you see it? Can you verify that? It's really hard to do that. And so that really doesn't work in a globalized environment. You can't have trust when you have these things in place. A bank is where your money goes to die. Bonds are risky. And then says never sell your Bitcoin. Jeff Ross said, we don't want money. We want the things that it can buy, which I thought that was pretty interesting way to think about wealth in general. Manipulation causes money to devalue. And so because of that fact, Bitcoin is hope and truth. Preston Pish says his closing words were buy Bitcoin and fall asleep for 5 years. And measure by the 1980 model, right before 1981 is when the model of CPI changed. He says that he believes we're at about a 20% rate of inflation. If you measure it by the 1980 model, if you look at the 1981 model, that's the way they're measuring it currently. And that was Greg Foss. Fascinating stuff. Next one I went to was You Are the Carbon They Want to Reduce. This was on the main stage. Nick Carter from Capital Island Ventures, Darren Feinstein from Core Scientific. He's got the great mustache there. Amanda Fabiana, she works with mining companies. And Kenzie Sigalos is the moderator of this one. She works for CNBC. She's a technology reporter and was talking about how she calls all these people up when she needs to do a story about, you know, Bitcoin mining or just Bitcoin in general. So they talked about how in 2017, there were really only 2 million people in the network, and now there's about 130 million miners. Analog to digital is always resistance. You can think about how the post office was resistant to email, and they were trying to figure out a way to tax email because they thought the post office would go away. They talked about the actual mining rigs. The miners themselves don't produce carbon. It's the energy sources that produce the carbon. And 66% of mining energy, the energy that miners, the physical devices that create Bitcoin, let's stick with that, is renewable. So they're incentivized to go to places around the world that have extra energy for whatever reason. So they do. And this energy argument against Bitcoin is just pure narrative, pure hype. It doesn't make any sense. It's not true. Banks and gold producers, for example, won't publish where their energy comes from. And think about how many banks and ATMs there are around the world and how much energy they must use. It's way more than Bitcoin mining, I will tell you that. Nick Carter, he says about energy supply and demand is mismatch for building mining farms. There's a negative cost for wind because it involves incentives. I didn't know that. That was pretty interesting. So the government incentivized wind farms. So if you use the energy that the wind farms are producing, there's actually a negative cost. So that's pretty cool. Stephen Barber, you can mine with renewables, even though there's a lot of talk that this is not the case. Miners should do press about the jobs and local economies. Nobody's talking about that. So he actually went to this little town in Texas and started up a huge mining operation that employs, I think, close to 100 people, something like that. In any event, it doesn't really matter the number, but it shows you that mining and Bitcoin is actually good for the population in general, and is going to, if anything can solve the ESG problem, then Bitcoin can. Bitcoin Mining Council is Darren Feinstein, the guy on the far right, or the second from the end there. He's been mining since, I think, 2011, so he's been in a long time. He has a council of Bitcoin mining, and Saylor is part of that, Michael Saylor, who I talked about earlier. He said, we can be decentralized, but we don't have to be deorganized. I thought that was really interesting. So they're trying to organize and get mining, a public figure, and try to curb some of these misnomers that people have about things that mining are doing to harm the earth, which isn't really actually the case. Stephen, the guy there with the mustache, he has a home mining. He's into home mining and providing information and equipment to do that. He thinks that that's an upstream to large scale oil, gas, hydro, or oil, gas, and hydro, he was saying, are places that he's looking to expand his operation. And he says it's going to flow downstream to home and small miners. So he has a large mining operation, but he also helps people if they want to mine at home. And Amanda, she talked about some of the regulations and things in that. I didn't take very many notes from what she said, but all right. So the annual State of Bitcoin was an interesting talk as well. These two guys, Dr. Adam Back on the left, and he says that Bitcoin is survivable and seizure resistant, two very important things to understand about Bitcoin. Steve Lee, he believes self-custody is very important, meaning that you can take your Bitcoin off of the network and transfer it onto a cold storage or a hardware wallet that's not connected to the internet. So you control it. You can keep it safe there. He said new development kits like Lightning are good for moving forward. The Lightning network that I talked about. They talked a little bit about mining centralization. And I think when we were talking about that, it was more of bringing the various mining companies around the world together to learn from one another. He says that centralization pool, so the mining pool is also, the mining pool decentralization makes it harder to mine a block, but centralization makes it easier. So that's right. He was saying about there's a way to put all the miners in one centralized network so that you're kind of helping each other out, I guess, to make it easier to mine and saves energy that way as well. Mining Z1 is a way for miners to participate. I'm sorry, I didn't take very good notes here. They're talking about the future of mining, and miners running a full nodes will be popular with millions in the future. They think we need to have innovation to attract new home miners. Intel will be making chips along with others to innovate. There currently there's only two manufacturers, and they were saying that they believe that it's going to be a lot less expensive. Right now to buy a S19 Pro mining rig is about $10,000, $11,000. They were talking about the ability to buy a mining rig for about the size of a PC. So that'll allow a lot more people to participate to the network, which will be good for Bitcoin in general. There are new cooling designs for miners. The major problem with mining and running this hardware is that it produces a lot of heat. So there's immersion technologies, meaning they're taking the actual mining hardware and immersing it into a liquid. And that distributes the heat a lot more efficiently. So I saw a bunch of those types of companies at the conference that were promoting their ways to cool miners. It's basically like an outdoor air conditioning unit that it runs just like an air conditioning. So basically runs outside, cools down, through these, however your air conditioner works, makes cold air or cold that the air runs across. And then in this case, it's a liquid that it's pretty neat technology. And I think what's going to happen is this technology is going to get better and better. And more people it's going to be accessible to more and more people. Talked about the Lightning Network. Adam says it's growing at a very fast rate, I guess I didn't correct that, but anyway, block size makes it impossible for millions of transactions. The Lightning Network fixes this. Yeah, so like I said, it's clunky to transact in Bitcoin itself, but the Lightning Network makes it better, a better transaction of finance or, costs or finance or dollars than anything else ever did before. He thinks that in the next 5 to 10 years, we'll really see the user experience improve. Like I was talking about, the Lightning service providers provided an app to connect to Lightning. And I think that technology just has to be easier. I tried to use my Lightning app to buy something 4 times, and it only worked once. So it's not there yet. Spiral is making a Lightning development kit that's going to make it, and that's Adam's company, Dr. Adam, the guy in the middle there, that's going to make it easier to build stuff on top of the Lightning network. And just like the internet was in its infancy, there wasn't much there, but then, emerged Google, then emerged other websites that made it easier to build things, and then emerged websites like, you know, Amazon that made it easier to buy things. So I think that we're at like 1999 of the internet right now. So in terms of Bitcoin and the different services that it can provide. LSPs, okay, so Lightning service providers in the future. So there's going to be an API that needs to be built, kind of like they've built in on the internet, you know, so a lot of the same problems need to be solved. And one thing, I don't know if I took notes about it or not, but what's interesting about Bitcoin versus the internet is that you actually have a chance to own part of the Bitcoin network. And can you imagine back in 1996, having the chance to own a part of the internet? We couldn't do it, but what if you could? That's something to think about. and channel rebalancing, peer-to-peer swap. They talked a little bit about that. That's kind of technical jargon for a lot of the technical things that need to happen. And let me see. That's about all I had for that one. I went into one with the US Constitution and Bitcoin. Neil Katyal, Supreme Court lawyer, and he also is owner of Galaxy Digital, or works for them, I think. He's a pretty interesting guy. He is, like I said, Supreme Court lawyer, but he got his start in the Supreme Court back when his own lawyer, when the good Guantanamo global tribunals were happening. Well, he filed a lawsuit because he thought, you know, it was obviously bad what they were doing, and he won that. So that's kind of how he got into the Supreme Court. It's a pretty interesting conversation. Justin Wales, he's head of legal for crypto.com. If I actually use crypto.com, interesting platform, does a lot of cool stuff. Place to buy and sell all kinds of digital assets. Neil he's actually on the prosecuting a case for George Floyd. So pretty big name, I guess, as it comes to Supreme Court law. And when he talked about Bitcoin and the lawsuits and things that are around that or are emerging, he said that he's really taking a back seat because he's concerned that we're so early in the where Bitcoin is that he's concerned about winning too many like big lawsuits that change policy, because it could have a backlash in the future, meaning that what if we don't know something now and all of a sudden we make policy because of a legal decision and it wasn't a good idea. And, you know, because we know so little or we're so early, he's concerned about that. There's challenges with the Constitution about Bitcoin and privacy. He thought, but he's trying to educate people about that. So Bitcoin transaction, financial or expressive speech with code. So that's kind of one of the, are Bitcoin transactions financial or are they expressive speech with code? And so those are some of the debates that are going on right now in the legal world. And he's trying to tell a story about and why some regulation is necessary to protect the future of Bitcoin. So I thought that was really interesting. And he thinks it's important that we do that for individual freedoms. There's constitutional backstops for this. So he's wondering, does government have a role in this? Why is it could be so onerous? And thinks that we all, he was talking to the crowd, need to start telling the story about Bitcoin and speak up. Oh my gosh. Sorry about that. Then he was talking about securities. We need to put something in place saying Bitcoin is not a security, even though they just said recently, head of the SEC said it's not a security. He thinks that there needs to be something put on the laws, the books about that. And then he talked a little bit about the current Supreme Court, which I thought was interesting. He said the current Supreme Court is the most conservative Supreme Court we've ever had. And he's in favor of the new Supreme Court justice that was just nominated, Justice Jackson. And he thinks that they're going to take a conservative approach to ruling on Bitcoin cases and the crypto space in general, which I thought was fascinating because I've been hearing people say the opposite, but I guess, what do they know? I mean, I listen to a lot of different people that come from a lot of different viewpoints. So from somebody from the Supreme Court saying that, I thought was really fascinating. And then there's Jordan Peterson. He had a great talk on being an entrepreneur, learning about how to become an entrepreneur, just basically said, you have to do it. And he created his first business. He had some psychological research that he had done, and he wanted to market it and figured out that, well, you have to learn how to market, and you have to communicate that, you have to build relationships, and and talked about the ethics of capitalism. He thinks that the left thinks it's predicated on exploitation, like capitalists exploit people for their money, they're evil. And he says the opposite is true, which I also believe, because customers have the freedom to choose what they're going to buy. If they find value in it freely, then, and the entrepreneur can deliver product that they said they're going to deliver, and it's good, then the word will get out, and the opposite would also be true, right? So the freedom to make a choice about what people value is really the most important thing. Nothing that slips through the hands of fools faster. Nothing slips through the hands of fools faster than money. I thought that was hilarious. Need to build trust with your customers. Grow, reinvest, grow more to help more people is kind of the way how he views capitalism, and I view it the same way. He said he wanted to understand what Bitcoin was, so he jumped into it, bought some. He believes that free markets must be decentralized and have deterministic algorithms. That's what Bitcoin does. Use a mechanism of what everyone thinks to come up with a good solution for what people want. And that's what kind of Bitcoin does. He says Bitcoin stops the central planning group. So I didn't get into that, but trying to keep this as short as I can, I'm already going longer than I thought. But groups have been popping up since the beginning of time, and think they can plan what's best for the world. And we're seeing that with the central planners that are out there. World Economic Forum is one of them, or is the one, actually. The question is if the base layer of Bitcoin currency changing would all be good. So he says that Bitcoin's going to change things a lot. And he's like, but we don't know what's going to happen. And it could be good or it could be bad. It could be something bad that could come of it. He said just words of caution. He doesn't see any thing right now, but he's just saying, you know, basically don't move fast and break things. Like, let's take our time here and figure this out so we do it the right way type of a philosophy. And that's what he is, a philosopher. He says the incorruptible solution for transfer of value, which I agree. He said that recently he didn't realize that Bitcoin was this type of incorruptible solution. And he says, like you all have known for a long time. The crowd laughed at that. And he goes, I wish that was funny. He said until recently he hasn't been in Bitcoin very long. He goes into the Genesis of the Bible, Tower of Babel, Australian economics. Basically, this is a story of the best kind of government is the one that's the most local. Once you get governments to be too complex, they fail. And he says the idea of things being too big to fail is quite the opposite. And if you look at this, the story of the Tower of Babel, it talks about that. And he says, as these things unfold, meaning like the Bitcoin network, this social network that this is creating, there will be corrections and things will fail. And he says, it's important to let them happen and don't interfere. We've seen over the recent past, like these corporations are too big to fail. Well, they probably should have failed and we would probably not be in the situation that we're in right now. And people wouldn't be saying Bitcoin's so important. Senator Cynthia Lummis spoke next. And she says that because of the work that she's been doing, Yellen is looking at Bitcoin different now. And we just saw her give a speech about that. Now, talked about the double spend problem and how the, not Bitcoin, but just generally blockchain fixes a double spend problem because every transaction is recorded on the blockchain. And Senator Gillibrand, lots of people from the government are asking for help and asking her to explain these things to them because they're really old people that have been in there for a long time. They don't understand it. And there's a bill in New York that they're working with to try to make sure this happens in a manner that makes sense and doesn't disrupt the evolution of Bitcoin technology. She says they never know where the pushback's going to come from, but she's just out there talking about it all the time. She's been in touch with as many Democrats as possible to get them to engage and understand. She recognized that as the result of this war that's happening, the Ukrainian people are actually able to take Bitcoin donations. And they're because of the speed of the network, they can spend it the same day. And she says, in previous crises like that could never happen like that before. It'd be days before people get money that they really needed that day. She talks about the argument of, you know, bad guys are using it. But she says both good guys and bad guys are using it. But the good guys are using it for freedom. She said it can help faster and cheaper and safer than ever before. She reiterated that with really anything, sending money is easier now than ever through the Lightning Network. Bitcoin gave them the ability to buy things. It kind of flipped the dialogue when Congress started to see that what it's changing and how fast it's changing and how dramatically it's changed over the past 12 months in the White House she's talking about. And then finally, she's talked about the central bank digital currencies and that not many people in the government right now are thinking about it, but realizes that digital currency is a very, very bad thing because it provides the ability for a government to literally control its citizens' money. It can turn it off or let it expire at any time. There's all kinds of really bad things that can happen. So she says that she thinks that she talked about the digital yuan in China, and they are using it right now. And it's literally a form of surveillance, and they recognize that. And she thinks that there'll be a stable coin that the people will use that will be issued by the government, but not necessarily controlled. I don't know if I believe that. she says that what she sees is possibly CBDCs would be a method of transferring money from central bank to central bank around the world, but not used with the citizens. Yep, we'll see. I don't know, but that's what she thought. But she was that was encouraging. This guy was pretty cool to listen to, Mark Novogratz of Galaxy Digital. I'm pretty sure he was the founder of that. Said a couple of final things. It's a great place to store your efforts. I love the way he said that. So you can do well by doing good. And with Bitcoin, with businesses, and that's what he tries to do. Now that we're seeing sovereign wealth funds, well, they're getting ready to. They can't really yet buy Bitcoin. But once we do start seeing sovereign wealth funds buy Bitcoin, it means it's at a value that, because they're going to have to buy so much of it, it's not going to move the market. That's when you know that we're on to the next stage. And he says that it's important for us all to contribute to the Bitcoin community. So that is it. These are not pictures from that. And I wanted to possibly show a couple pictures, but anyway, so after that, like I said, we went to the beach on Saturday. It was fun. Went to the concert. It was a fun time in Miami. Can't wait to go back next year. And thanks for watching.